This is a free Off The Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off The Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. The Off The Ball Rugby Roadshow is coming to your province. Join some of the biggest stars from Leinster, Munster, Ulster and Connacht as we travel round the country to preview the 2026-27 rugby season. Don't miss your chance to be there. Get your tickets now at offtheball.com/events. Football on Off The Ball with NoviBet. Get up to €10 back as a free bet on the biggest Premier and Champions League matches every week with NoviBet. NoviBet, built for the big games.
18 plus, play responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Shay, we're here in fire at the launch of Premier Sports, new season ahead. Mm-hmm. There's Champions League, there's Premier League.
Yeah.
I think the only place to start here is La Liga, because we've got a new Irish superstar who's gone over and scored the winner against Real Madrid the other night. We know he plays Lille tomorrow night in the Champions League as well. I mean, firstly, what have you made of the start he's had in his opening couple of games, Troy Parrott?
Yeah, buzzing for him really, because he's hit the ground running, isn't he? And to go to a new club, obviously a big club in Real Betis, and to score your first goal, and then the winning goal as well against the mighty Real Madrid. I mean, it couldn't get off to a better start, really, could it? You could imagine what the fans are thinking of this new signing, and of course, all us Irish are buzzing that he's hit the ground running, because some big games coming up soon as well for Ireland, so it's the perfect start, really.
What did you make of the move when it came about? Because I know West Ham were heavily linked and looked like it was going to be that way for a long time. Were you happy to see him go to Spain?
I was happy. No disrespect to West Ham, but you know, I think Troy said himself last year about maybe he's not suited to the Championship because it's quite a physical, you know, league, lots of long balls. I know it's changed a little bit in recent times, but, you know, I think La Liga suits him. The kind of, you know, the build he is and the way links play up and stuff. And obviously he's a goal scorer, even his goal against Real Madrid. You know, he's the first person to react. And it's an instinct thing when it comes to forwards and being in the right place at the right time. He was expecting Courtois maybe to parry it. And you know, if he doesn't anticipate that sort of that save, then he doesn't score. So I think it's a good league. Obviously Pellegrini, the manager as well, a hugely experienced manager, and I'm sure his coaching staff and people around him as well will help him improve as a player.
Just on that finish alone of the weekend as a goalkeeper, like, I think the first thing to stick out to me is that he managed to think it over Courtois.
Yeah.
And Courtois spreads himself quite well. He seems to have that knack to know exactly where to put it.
Yeah, we've seen Courtois in the past. I think even last year at Anfield, we might have covered on Premier Sports, actually one of the saves where he's come flying out and he's spread himself and he's lifted his foot up and he saved the with his foot, you know, and the exact same motion at the weekend when Troy scored past him. He had this sort of whereabouts to, I've got to go high with the finish, because if I don't, then, you know, the big man's going to get a foot on it, you know. So again, he made it look easy, but you've seen strikers in the past would have hit the keeper or even skied it over the bar. So it's a nice finish.
He's got Lille, as we said, tomorrow night. They're going to travel to Dortmund, they're going to travel to Bayern Munich, they're going to host Arsenal. You've played in the competition, you've played against Barcelona and Inter and big teams. Just what are those experiences like?
Well, it's very special. I think, you know, when you line up, even just at the start of games, when you hear the Champions League music and the sort of ball sort of fills the centre circle, and, you know, it does feel different to a Premier League game. It does feel, you know, to you know, Dutch League, obviously, that Troy was used to last season. You know, it'll feel extra special, it really will. I remember standing up with Newcastle at times and the hairs in the back of your neck, because you're always watching the Champions League game. You know, there's more eyes on it than there's everyone's watching, and so it's a huge competition. And I'm sure Troy, we've seen obviously in an Ireland jersey, sometimes the bigger the games, you know, the bigger the performance and the more important the goal seems as well. And he stood up to that. And yeah, we always build someone up in this country, and you know, Troy's backed it up, and we hope that this move now is something that he's going to keep improving, keep scoring goals, and you know, we see where he ends up.
Did you get nervous? Maybe more nervous for those Champions League games than you did for
the
games?
I don't know if it's nervous or it's probably more excitement. And you know, you're leading up to a big game. There's, you know, the day before, if you're in an away stadium and you train at the stadium the night before, and there's big media, sort of all the cameras are on you, and there's a lot more sort of around it than razzmatazz, I suppose, around the Champions League games. And the European nights are special atmospheres, you know, home and away. So they are. They do feel different, and again, you know that there's so many people watching.
We might touch on Newcastle in a minute, just while we're on the topic of Irish strikers. I want to talk about Evan Ferguson.
Yeah.
Because I know Fabian Hertzler came out last week and made some comments about him coming back from injury. I mean, I think with the Troy mania, people have maybe kind of forgot that we had the possibility to have the pair of them together up front again. Like, from what we saw Evan Ferguson before the injuries, what are you expecting to see when he comes back?
Well, hopefully he gets a run in the team. That's the most important thing. It's very difficult, I think, to go in off the bench a few times, you know, sort of substitute appearance. I think he needs to be trusted by Hertzler to start regularly. And again, I suppose, keep a clean bill of health. He's had his injury issues over the last, not just season, but the last couple of seasons. And, you know, he's a big guy, strong guy, but he's obviously, when you get one big injury, it seems to lead on to a few more. And I think the best thing and the biggest thing that Evan can try and do is have a clean bill of health. And that's out of his hands at times, I suppose. But I'm surprised maybe he didn't move maybe in the window, you know, even to go on loan perhaps and have a guaranteed playing position, because the competition's high at Brighton at the minute. So I think, but it is quite exciting if you've got Troy playing obviously in La Liga and of course Evan Ferguson playing in the Premier League. You know, to come over here and play for us would be I think for opposition teams would be quite daunting, because on their day they're two brilliant players.
I know you're on punditry duty here in Premier Sports. You're also on punditry duty in England Match of the Day.
Yeah.
You have a new colleague this year, Robbie Keane, has joined the punditry team.
Yeah, I played paddle with him a couple of weeks ago. We never mentioned it, actually. He's coming from a job, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's. I'm sure Robbie wants to become a manager, come back into the management side of things, you know. But I think the punditry thing, and obviously I'm doing it quite regularly now, it keeps you involved in football, you know, keeps you watching games at a weekend and keeps you tuned in, I think. But I'm sure Robbie's aspirations are, you know, he's done such a great job in the two previous managerial jobs, they'll be to get back managing. But again, I think the likes of Premier Sports and of course Match of the Day as well, you're in the public eye, and you know, people will see Robbie on there and think, you know, he speaks well, he knows the game. And again, it's just keeping yourself relevant, I suppose, for people in the future that'll want a manager, because I'm sure that's, I think, where Robbie sees his future, not with a microphone, but on the bench and managing, you know, a top team.
He was heavily linked to the Celtic job before Martin O'Neill got it again. Like, were you shocked at all, or were you like agreed that he was in kind of those kind of circles? Because I know among some fans there was discontent, and other people thought he should absolutely be getting that sort of gig. I don't know what you thought.
Well, I think Martin's only signed for a year, so I'm sure that's part of the conversation again, you know, come the end of this season coming up. I'm sure he'll be part of the conversation, and rightly so. I mean, he's won two or three trophies in two different countries, so I think he should be part of the conversation for any sort of top job that comes up. You know, Keith Antrews is an exciting example of the job he's done at Brentford. I mean, Arbeloa done a sort of interim job at Real Madrid, now he's got a big job in Fulham, you know, so why can't the likes of Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, you know, Keith Andrews shown, why can't they get the big jobs? And, you know, Robbie has had a feeling or a touch of success where he's been, and he's proven to a lot of people he can do it, so he just needs to be given the opportunity.
Did you think when you're in the dressing room with him throughout the years that he'd go into management?
I think so, yeah. I think he always had that leadership sort of qualities. He was obviously the captain for Ireland as well, and he always had, you know, aspirations, I think, of being a manager or a top coach, you know. So Keith Andrews, the same, obviously a leader in midfield. But Duffer, I would have said no when he was a player, but, you know, we all know what's happened since he stopped playing, and he loves coaching, he loves being on the grass with the players, and obviously the job he'd done at Shelburne was immense, and now being assistant manager in the Premier League as well, it's you know, great for his CV, and I think it's great for Ireland as well, that you know, the Irish connection we have at Brentford with Duffer and Keith, and of course Nathan Collins and Quaven Keller and goal and stuff, and there's a real, you know, a lot of Irish fans, I'm sure, look to Brentford now, look to the results and look to their performances.
You said you were surprised to see him go into management. When he went into it and did quite a successful job here at Shelburne, were you surprised to see him take a number two job somewhere else?
Not really, because obviously the Premier League is such a big league, and it's you know, to be a number two in the Premier League is still, you know, a big thing to have on your CV. And again, I think the coaches that Keith has around him as well, and the people around him, it's you know, I think Duffer and Keith are a very good friendship, I think, away from football as well. So I think that it was natural for him to get back in, and an opportunity to get back in at the best league in the world for me. So I think it's a good fit with the two of them together.
Where do you think Keith can go in terms of management career? Because I know when he went immediately into Brentford, there was kind of people questioning that he'd never had a job before.
Yeah.
And he immediately kind of shut everyone up and seems to continue to be doing so this season. Were you surprised when people were questioning him when he took the job?
I think that's natural. You know, when you haven't managed before and your first ever managerial job is in the Premier League, people start going, where's this guy come from? You know, that's just natural reaction to anyone getting the job, you know. So, but like Arbeloa now, Arbeloa, I can't even say his name properly, at Fulham, you know, people say he's only the interim manager at Real Madrid, he's done the underage teams and stuff, you know, but straight away I'm googling what's he done before that, you know. So I think until you're sort of proven at that level, and Keith's done that now in the last season, then, you know, people will ask them questions. But what he has proven last year, Keith, is what a brilliant manager job he's done at Brentford, and again, he wants to back that up this season, and I think, you know, the sort of building blocks were in place, but you have to lead that on from what Thomas Frank, the job he done at Brentford as well.
He looks really calm and really composed, and even when he speaks to the media, I saw a clip of him last week kind of defending Nathan Collins like quite strongly. He got asked, was there, you know, doubts over putting him into a back four, and he very quickly dismissed it. He seems very comfortable in the role.
Yeah.
Is he always like that when he's a player as well?
Well, I think Keith obviously was involved in the media before he got involved in the coaching side of things as well, and understands the media side of things as well, which I think is an honor fella. And I'm not knocking him, because he speaks really well. He presents really well, and I think it was a moment last year, I think they got knocked out of the cup as well, and one of the guys missed a penalty, and instead of hammering him for taking the penalty, he was like, no, I've put my arm around him, said, well done for stepping up and having that sort of authority and stuff, you know. So there's two ways to skin his cat, you know. He sees the players on a regular basis, you know. Some players might need an arm over the shoulder, and some might need a rocket, you know. So I think he speaks well, and again, he knows these players better than any of us from the outside, you know. So but it is nice that Nathan's there. He's the captain of club and country, you know, and obviously Keith has given him that armband at Brentford.
One of the reasons, as you said, that a lot of Irish people are going to follow Brentford is not just for the dugout. Obviously Nathan is there, and Quivín is in goal. Were you surprised when he went for quite a relatively low fee, considering the fees in the Premier League moment?
Yeah, I said that last year. I think the good thing at Brentford done, but they got it done early, so when the window opened they got him signed early the next day, I think, you know. And they obviously must have been talking to his agent for months leading up to that moment, you know. But I was surprised that Quivín maybe didn't leave it a bit longer in the window, perhaps. But then I think he's had false dawns before in the window and got down to deadline day and not moved, you know. I think he was at the age where it was a must sort of move Liverpool last summer, because he had to play regularly. But again, it's great for him that he's played all season and really sort of cemented that number one jersey for club and country, let's be honest. And, you know, he's probably hoping for another season of similar ilk to last year.
Where do you think he can get to? And in comparison to his current colleagues in the Premier League in goals, like, where do you think he ranks? It's something that we were talking about the other day in Off the Ball, and you kind of think, Jesus, there are really many better goalkeepers than him at the moment in the Premier League.
Well, not many, no. I mean, that's the thing. And of course, Brentford has a model of sort of developing players and then, you know, selling them on again. So maybe that was another thing in Quivín's head, that I can play a couple of seasons at Brentford and maybe move again. And I mentioned the guys over there perhaps, but maybe, I don't know if there's any sort of buyback clause at Liverpool, because, you know, Alisson's into his 30s now, perhaps. We've seen the same at Trafford when he went to Burnley, and Man City had a buyback clause, you know. So we don't know the ins and outs of that, you know, but you would think, you know, Quivín knows Liverpool inside out. That would maybe be something that could be in the future as well.
Do you think that Keller will be ready to go back to Liverpool?
Yeah, he's ready. Yeah. I think he was ready when he was at Liverpool. Never mind go back to Liverpool. You know, again, I think he's proven both at club level and international level, he's a brilliant goalkeeper. And the thing that probably strikes me most about him is nothing really seems to faze him. He never, you know, he's very calm, I think, on and off the pitch, and I think that shows in his performances.
I want to talk to you on one of your former clubs. We might get into a couple of them, but Newcastle in particular have had a lot of movement in the window. There's a new manager in the door, Matthijs Iceland. There's new players in the door. Then there's players who maybe didn't get such a look in last season, the likes of Johan Vissa, the likes of Anthony Elanga.
Yeah.
They look pretty good in their first couple of games. Yeah. I know they did well to get back and get a draw at the weekend. Are you still watching them closely?
Yeah, very closely. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, people say it was a turmoil in the summer. But other people would say, you know, it was a rebuilding job. You know, Ross Wilson, the head of recruitment, I think, done a great job in a sense that they got top fees for Tonali, Gordon and Guimarães, and then they've reinvested in the squad heavily, of course, as well. a lot of the players they brought in is I think 20 and under, so their recruitment model's changed a bit. Perhaps, you know, last summer they spent heavily on Valdemara and Elanga that you mentioned, and Ramsey perhaps, maybe, I can't remember now, but they've you talk about Elanga and Vissa as well, they've been transformed a wee bit under the new manager. Perhaps maybe they just got a pre-season under the belt. Vissa had a bad injury last year when he turned up, so you know, there's lots of optimism now 3 weeks into the new season, and there was 3 weeks before the season started. There was a lot of negativity, and I suppose the unknown with the players coming in, and you know, Eddie Howe, don't forget he left as well, Kieran Trippier left, one of their captains, you know. So, but again, you know, these young players, young manager, hungry people come into the club, and it feels like the games I've covered, they've started off really well.
What do you make of the new manager? He seems very different to Eddie Howe, both in his personality on the touchline and in the media room as well.
Yeah, I've not met him, like, but he does strike me as enthusiastic. I've seen some of the training sessions, you know, online as well, like everyone else, and the demands he's putting on players. And but I suppose I think what stood out for me is maybe the Tottenham game when they won 2-0. You know, the players were hugging him and high-fiving him, and it looked really genuine, you know what I mean? And sometimes it takes time to build those relationships, but you know, whatever he's doing at the training ground, I think, and bringing the group together, I think he's done a brilliant job. But you shouldn't take any away from Eddie Howe the job he's done, the legacy he's left as well. You know, Champions League twice in 4 or 5 years, and winning that elusive cup as well after so many years. So I think Eddie, you know, felt it was time to pass the baton on to Yeisler, and again, I suppose give great credit to the powers that be at Newcastle for recruiting him, because I was probably one of the guys and one of the Newcastle fans to start googling who Yeisler is and where he's come from and what he's done, and you know, they look like they've got a good one.
You used the word elusive there to talk about the cup, and I know they didn't win a trophy for a long time.
Yeah.
When you were there, did you feel kind of a weight of pressure from the fans to win something?
Well, yeah, and we didn't do it. We got to finals and semi-finals, and we just couldn't get over the line. So I was at Wembley when they lifted the, you know, the Carabao Cup, and I felt like a weight was lifted, I think, even as an ex-player and all the fans. You know, I was doing TV that day, actually, and you could see the fans were crying and tears in their eyes, because you think, I was there 12 years, you think, oh, maybe the club's jinxed, or you just think you're never going to win a trophy, you know. So I think that day will. There was even people after, you know, I can die happy now because I've seen Newcastle lift the trophy. So that's how much it means to the people up there.
It's a lot of change, it seems like, at a lot of your former clubs. Manchester City had huge change in the off-season. I mean, you could start in so many places here, but number one is Pep Guardiola is gone, who has been the figurehead for the club for the last 10, 11 years, and Enzo Maresca has come in. Were you surprised at Maresca coming in?
Probably not, because he was at the club before twice. They know what kind of guy he is, what kind of manager he is, obviously, and had success at Chelsea and Leicester as well. So I think they knew who they were bringing in and what kind of personality it was, and what way the club was run under Pep, you know. So I suppose in the cold light of day, he's probably the perfect sort of replacement, because he's not going to come in and make wholesale changes with systems and the way style of play and all that kind of stuff, you know. But obviously, when you lose Pep Guardiola, you know, one of the heavyweights of management in world football, and he's made such an imprint on the Premier League and style of play and things, then there's going to be a bedding in period, I suppose, for the new manager. But the squad they have, I don't think he's got time to bed in anyone. You have to hit the ground running, which they have done. They've got off to a very positive start in the victories they've had in the Premier League. Also, we're covering them tomorrow night for Premier Sports when they start the Champions League campaign in Porto. So again, that's a different challenge for them when the Champions League games start kicking in. There's more demands on the squad, but they have recruited really well. I know Hugo Viana really well from a Newcastle day. We played together at Newcastle, of course, and he's had a big summer as well, with you losing the likes of Rodri, your Ballon d'Or winner, but you've spent over $300 million in Buadi, Elliot Anderson, and of course Enzo Fernandez last week. So there's lots of change on the pitch and off the pitch there.
I think people weren't really surprised at the fee concerning Elliot Anderson, especially him being a homegrown player.
Yeah.
Buadi's maybe someone that people haven't seen a lot.
Yeah.
The $100 million price tag seems quite big for an 18-year-old, but in Enzo Fernandez in particular, Chelsea have managed to turn around for a profit.
Yeah.
He's gone to Manchester City. A lot of people were a little bit surprised at that move going ahead, and Chelsea managing to spin a profit for him.
Yeah.
Can you see him, or how does he fit into that Manchester City team?
Well, he wasn't starting at the weekend against Bournemouth, and against play Coventry. Sorry, apologies, against Coventry at the weekend, and obviously Nico Riley got injured in the warm up, and he was straight in, brought on. I was surprised he wasn't starting actually to start with, but you know, he played well. He was part of the goal as well. He set Semenyo off down the right wing for the cross for the all important goal. How does he fit in? That's the conundrum I think the manager's going to have, because Elliot Anderson, you would think, is more of the sitting midfielder, and then Enzo's got a bit more license to get a wee bit more forward. We've seen that in these Chelsea days. He comes up with important goals as well, but I think the balance will be important in midfield, because you need a defensive sort of shield, because even Coventry at the weekend gave Coventry three or four big chances to score, you know, and if you do that against the better teams, and of course in the Champions League as well, you'll get punished. So I think you'll have to do the sort of legwork, you know, covering the back four a bit more as well.
Do you think they are good enough to put up to Arsenal this season?
Yeah, I do. We're asked at the start of the season, and I know you mentioned Pep Guardiola, and rightly so, but I also think that voice after 10 years and the demands can be maybe tiring at times, and I think Maresco brings a freshness, a newness, and you know, a sort of clean slate for players that have been there for a number of years. And maybe an excitement as well, and I think that might play into City's hands as well. Obviously, Arsenal are the out and out favourites for the Premier League, and even maybe some people for the Champions League as well. But I do believe, because City have not won it for two seasons now, the Premier League, I think there's a hunger there as well to bounce back.
Just before we talk about Arsenal, you spoke there about maybe players getting to move on from Pep Guardiola after being there for so long. Have you ever experienced anything like that in your career, when a new manager, maybe people from the outside look at them going and think it's a little bit of a surprise, but as players in the dressing room, you felt like it was ready to move on?
Yeah, I mean, there's snippets come out of Pep Guardiola's meetings, you know, in recent times. They've done a documentary, didn't they? And, you know, I'm tired, I've had enough type thing, you know, and so again, that can rub off, you know, and I know it's, you know, Pep was all in 24/7, you know, so I just think, you know, even we talk about Newcastle, you know, that, you know, Eddie was only there for 5 years, but still this new guy's come in, and there seems to be a bit of a lift for the fans and the players alike, you know. So again, I don't think that'll happen what happened at the other half of Manchester when Fergie left, you know, there was a huge drop off, and people would argue still haven't got it right, you know, but I think the building blocks are in place at City for a long number of years, and I don't see that drop off at all. I see maybe the opposite. Maybe there's a freshness that can bring them back to the top of the Premier League.
Have you experienced that in the dressing room, where kind of if the manager's going through emotions that you haven't seen a lot in their tenure there, does it rub off on the players? Because I think when we were watching that documentary, people were kind of wondering, you know, what are the players thinking while this is kind of happening?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was quite honest, and I was surprised that some of the footage got out, that, you know, Pep was talking about his sort of divorce and about the emotions of manager and being tired and all that. You know, sometimes that's kept behind closed doors, but I'm not saying I don't think to that level, to be honest, you know, but you can tell when a manager's under pressure, or I just felt that, you know, even the last few months of last season, it wasn't common knowledge, but it felt like it had a feeling that Pep was going to leave in the summer, and he did, of course. But again, you know, the City is a huge club now, and from the days I was at City as a player, you know, it's been transformed with the City Group and all the clubs around the world that they now own as well, and it's a huge club, but it's been a huge club off the pitch as much as on the pitch, you know. And I do believe, maybe a bit like on a smaller scale with Brentford, they have the people in place in the right, so when Pep goes, or even if Maresca leaves, they'll have someone else lined up already to come in, you know. That's the sort of the way the club's run now.
What do you think about Arsenal in terms of not just Mikel Arteta and the coaching, but the style of play as well? I know Kenny has spoken about their style of play sometimes as well. As a pundit, when you're analysing it, if you're just watching it as a casual fan, what do you think of it?
Well, you could argue that last season's winning team, that the style of play was, I wouldn't say boring, but I'd say workmanlike, nearly. That they got the job done, set plays, you know, get a goal in front, sort of sit and defend deep, and get the win. And then you could argue the season before and the season before that, when they finished second, it's like, oh, it was expansive, you know, exciting football. And then Mikel's gone, well, we haven't won anything. We haven't won the Premier League. And now they have won the Premier League. So you might see a little bit, even in the games this season, a bit more offensive and a bit more exciting going forward. But I still believe that they might have someone missing in the forward area. It's obviously Jesus left, and I think they tried hard to get Alvarez through the door. It didn't happen. I mean, Havertz has started the season really well, but I still think they're short. Jokeres still has a lot to do to convince me that he's an out-and-out number nine striker for Arsenal at the elite level with Champions League and Premier League, because there'll be favours for both of them. So I do believe that there's still a chink there that maybe I don't know, I suppose you could argue the same in the City with Haaland. If Haaland gets injured, what happens, you know? But I still think that they've got an amazing squad, like, and sitting here 12 months and fans going, aha, I told you so, they'd won the league and won the Champions League, but you know, they've had a good start. But I still think there's still room for improvement in that forward area.
Do you enjoy watching them?
Do you enjoy watching them? At times last year, probably not. But again, I suppose it's down to Arteta and his coaching staff to evolve, maybe. You know, they have lifted the Premier League now. They're Premier League champions. You know, I think that takes a lot of weight off the players' shoulders and Arteta's shoulders a bit, albeit they wanted again. But you know, we cover games, obviously Premier Sports, and it seems the pressure is mounting and mounting until they get their hands on that trophy. Now it feels like they can play with more freedom this season, and maybe we'll enjoy more. You know, we've seen obviously the game against Chelsea at the weekend, a couple of really good goals. I mean, the Odegaard goal was a special goal. You know, Havertz won't get an assist, but the step over was pretty special to watch. So again, maybe they're going to play with more freedom this year and more excitement. Saka looks like he's back up to Saka of old, you know, the best form of him. He's a brilliant player, and he looks like he's hungry to be successful this season as well.
Just a couple more things I want to ask you about. One, I suppose, is do you think there are any other teams that can put it up to Arsenal or indeed Manchester City this season?
Well, I mean, Chelsea, you know, if yesterday's game alone, I think Gabriel should have been sent off after 7 minutes. He kicked Martinez in the head, and for me it's a straight red card. So we could be sitting here talking about Chelsea winning 2-3 yesterday against 10-man Arsenal, and then we'll be talking about Chelsea winning the league, you know, because they've got no European football. They've got a new manager. They've got some brilliant players in the squad. João Pedro, Rodgers and Palmer up top look the real deal, look very exciting. Defensively, there's still question marks over Chelsea, perhaps. You know, I do like Liverpool. Yes, they haven't started the season great, but I like Areola, the manager. You know, when you look at the forward players they have, you know, Isak got two the other night against Ipswich. Barcola, I think Virts is still more to come. You know, Gakpo started the season really well. And again, maybe there's still question marks over their defensive side of things at Liverpool, but they'll be looking to try and win the league back. I'm probably forgetting the team here. Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City.
Villa, Spurs. No one else.
Spurs,
Manchester United, of course, as well.
Man United, yeah, they finished well last season. They've had a quiet start. I felt that Man United should have recruited more in the summer. I don't think they've got enough reinforcements in, and then probably again in defensive areas, because now they've got the demands. I think they played 40 games last season. They've got the demands of the Champions League. Obviously, you think they'll go further in the League Cup and the FA Cup than they did last season, so there's going to be a lot more games and a lot more demands on these players, so that'll, I think, in variable will suffer the Premier League. So I don't think they'll challenge at the very top for the Premier League. But yeah, so probably the ones I said would be Chelsea, Arsenal and Man City, and maybe Liverpool.
Another Donegal man, James Coleman, has found himself without a club at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, the Ireland manager Heimir Hallgrímsson has spoke about how important he is, but on, but also maybe more importantly off the pitch as well as a leader.
Yeah.
Have you had any conversations with Seamus recently, or how you see his career going?
No, I'm not spoke to him. Just the odd text, you know, because I think he was linked with making a Gailey comeback, or maybe pulling on the Finn Harps jersey, perhaps. But no, knowing Seamus as I do, I'm sure he's working hard behind the scenes, keeping fit, and just waiting for the right, I suppose, opportunity. Because you know, I still think he's got lots to offer, and I still think he wants to play, you know, for club and country. So now the window's shut, it seems like players in Seamus' position will become stronger, because you know, clubs maybe haven't got a right back that they wanted or whatever, couldn't get him across the line before the window shut. So now these players are I'm sure talking to clubs, and I hope Seamus gets a club sooner rather than later, because he needs to get up to sort of match fitness and get back to playing.
I think he's crucial for Ireland still.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Hamer spoke strongly about him, and you know, he is a leader of men and leader in the dressing room, but even his performances, you know, I think sometimes you're doing him an injustice if you just bring him for a long, because he's a brilliant leader off the dressing room or off the pitch, sorry, but I think he's a brilliant leader on the pitch as well. And you know, his performances and then some of them big games, I remember even the one here in Dublin against Ronaldo, and you know, and he stood his ground and had a brilliant performance. And you know, I think with these sort of super younger players we have in the squad, I think it's important that we get him back in.
You obviously were involved in coaching, like quite quickly after you finished your career. You were involved in Derby County with a couple of managers, and then you haven't really dipped your toe back in since.
Yeah.
Are you happy doing the punditry side of things? Is there still a niche to
No,
get
there's about? Not really that big of a niche, if I'm being brutally honest. No, I think I had the experience. Obviously, Frank Lampard brought me in, and then Philip Cocu, and then Wayne Rooney. I had three different managers over the 3 years, and a great experience in the sense that, you know, I learned that side of it, the coaching side of it, you know, long days, but you're analysing opposition, you're analysing your own players, you're watching lots of games, you know, it's 24/7 as a lot of coaches will tell you, but there's no real balance in life when it comes to family or kids and things like that. So I feel there's more balance now with doing the media work, and I don't miss it, if I'm being honest, you know, so that tells you in itself that I feel comfortable in the position I'm in, but I'm still involved. Obviously, I watch a lot of the games and cover a lot of the games, and talking about a lot of the games, you know. So I still feel very much part of the football family, or whatever you want to call it, you know, on the media side of things.
Did you find it tough personally and family? I know you said there it's long hours.
Yeah. Well, basically, I live in Manchester, so I was leaving at 6:30 every morning, getting home at 7-8 o'clock at night, 7 days a week. So, you know, it did feel personally that there was more to life than you know, doing that 7 days a week. And you know, the Champions is like three games a week, and you think Sunday's a day off, but no, you're training the lads who didn't play the day before, and you're prepping for a Tuesday game, so there's no days off basically. And it's a lot of fans probably don't see that. There's a lot of time. It's a big commitment.
Have you had offers to come back?
Yeah, one or two little sort of things, you know, but I didn't feel it was right, and if I'm being brutally honest, I'm really happy and where I'm at the minute, and a bit more balance for family and even just personal life, going to the gym or playing paddle or golf or whatever it might be. You get a bit more time for yourself.
I was going to ask you quickly before we finish up. I know you've been involved in some paddle adventures recently. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, obviously we're going to open one in Goffs in Kildare. We've just finally got the planning permission through now. We've had the go back and do the planners again and rejig a few things, and so we've got the planning passed now. So now it's about getting the hard helmets on, getting the shovels out, and getting into the ground, because it's obviously a big development. It's going to be a big 11 courts, I think it is, and it's going to be a big sort of setup. But yeah, I'm excited to get it going now. It's been passed, so that's the biggest hurdle over, and now we have to, as I say, get the thing up and running.
There's a bit of a link between football and paddle, so it seems like there's a lot of ex-footballers, current footballers.
But to be fair, I do weights and stuff, heavy weights, but I don't like doing CV and running or bike work and stuff, whereas paddle gives me the best of that, you know, because there's a competitive edge to it. You get a sweat on, and, you know, for me, it's the closest thing to playing again, really is. Anyway, you play as paddle, there's a real addiction to it. Like, you want to play again and again, so there's a huge excitement. I mean, I live in England, there's a lot of paddle courts around me and stuff, and, you know, there's lots of group chats on the go, and can you play tonight, can you play tomorrow, it's all that kind of stuff, you know. But I think in this country, in Ireland, I think we're a wee bit behind the wave, and hopefully, you know, arena paddle we're going to build in Kildare is going to be the biggest and best in the country, and people will go there not just for paddle, but there's going to be restaurants and gym and recovery, and it's going to be a real big centre for all of it.
Just very quickly before I let you go, two quick four questions for you.
Yeah.
If I was to ask number one, current best keeper in the Premier League?
Oof. Yeah. Current best keeper in the Premier League? That's a good question, that. I'll probably go with Donnarumma. You know, I covered his game at the weekend. You know, they won 1-0 against Coventry, but he's just a brilliant goalkeeper. Some of the saves he makes, he's a top keeper. So for now, I'll go Donnarumma.
And who's going to win the Premier League this season?
Well, you hear it here first. I'm going to say Man City, and it's a big, people will question it, because I've worked with a few experts. I think Owen McDevitt, actually one of our Premier League sports, he says they'll finish outside the top four. I worked recently with Michael Owen, he said the same. I don't know if I was off camera or on camera, but so again, obviously there's lots of question marks over Maresca and the squad and the team, but I just think that City will be champions come the end of the season.
We'll find out. Shay Given, thanks
you.
Very much.
No problem.
Football on Off the Ball with NoviBet. Get up to €10 back as a free bet on the biggest Premier and Champions League matches every week with NoviBet. NoviBet, built for the big games.
18 plus, play responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Off the Ball Rugby Roadshow is coming to your province. Join some of the biggest stars from Leinster, Munster, Ulster and Connacht as we travel round the country to preview the 2026-27 rugby season. Don't miss your chance to be there. Get your tickets now at offtheball.com/events.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. for access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off The Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.